This morning, I went out looking for Martin Luther King Jr. Park. It's really close to the radio station where I work every day, but I didn't know it existed until a brief exchange about it on this show the day after voters decided to preserve the name Paseo instead of naming that boulevard after Martin Luther King Jr. I looked at a map. The park was supposed to be between 71 Highway and Paseo on the east and west, Cleaver and Swope on the north and south. I drove back and forth, looking for what I was picturing in my mind as a park. Something with a swing set or benches. And then I realized the green plot of land that does have tennis courts, but otherwise just a porta potty toppled on its side. That was the park. It was named for Martin Luther King Jr. back in 1978. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And Kansas City does have something named after Martin Luther King Jr. after all. And a grassroots movement is now underway to do something with it. We're going to hear about that now. You can call 816-235-2888 to join the conversation. My first guest is Donald Rankins. He's a volunteer who's been helping to clean up this park. Donald, good morning.
Good morning.
What inspired you to do something about our city's long-neglected MLK Park?
Well, after the Paseo got stuck as the Paseo, I kind of noticed that there was a bad taste in Kansas City's mouth after the fact, and I was like, well, there has to be something that we can do to help preserve or uplift the name of Dr. King, you know, in its place, just to kind of demonstrate that, you know, we're not about bigotry and, you know, all those things. And I happened to come across the MLK Park. I was like, wow, we've had something this entire time.
And you happened to come across it how? Just driving by, noticing the sign, or what?
I actually researched it back in March, and I was stunned. I was like, we have this? So then I went by myself, and I noticed very much what you noticed. And I was like, well, this is they can have a nice memorial here, or swing set would be nice, some bathrooms. So that's kind of
upright.
Yeah.
Upright.
Yeah. Well, you know, some installed baths, some plumbing would be. And that's kind of what sparked it off.
Do you, take me with you and take our listeners with you to your first experience being there and actually like being with a group trying to do something?
It was very surreal. It was great to have such a diverse group of people there with me and just to kind of take it in. We were kind of looking around like, well, this could be better. So we kind of just said, okay, let's start just picking up some stuff. Let's pick up some trash. Let's see what, survey the area and see what, we can really do to beautify it for now until we can eventually get the city behind us to, improve it even more than our pockets could do.
Yeah, tell me about the trash situation, because I understand that there is still a lot of trash down below when
yes.
you get by the creek. Up on the ground level, like on street level, there isn't trash. And
no,
I'm wondering if that is because of what you have already done or if it's mostly down by the creek.
A lot of it is down by the creek. And I think some of it kind of either gets blown up or, sometimes people kind of hang out up there and just drop their trash or whatever. And, it was mainly the purpose of that was mainly just a sign of solidarity for us as a group. You know, it was kind of like it was our first time, meeting a lot of us. You know, we had joined the group so quickly. We just needed people to meet up. So that was our initial move, was just to get everybody together.
I understand that the park does get used. Have you encountered people using it as it is?
Yeah. 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 I met a guy. I forget his name. If I remember his name, I'll drop his name. But I remember a guy who plays tennis up there. People play tennis. They practice tennis. Some people go for, jogs around the park or they take their dog and walk around. So, yeah, so it does get used by some people, but it's nowhere near like, Jacob Luce or anything like that.
How many years of trash would you say has accumulated down by the creek?
By the creek, maybe, just judging by it, maybe three. Maybe three.
3 years of trash.
Yeah, if I had to just estimate off the top of my head. There's some enough noticeable, not like, toxic dump or anything like that, not like a trash dump, but enough to be seen, from the street.
So we're going to get right back to that story of the park. But first, a little context from Michelle Tyreen Johnston. Mm-hmm. She's KCUR's race, culture, and identity reporter. She's been following the whole debacle around Paseo versus MLK Boulevard. And she's just gotten home from a trip to Senegal and the Netherlands to see how other countries go about honoring Martin Luther King Jr. Michelle, good morning.
A nasally good morning to you, Gina.
Yeah, you have the seasons. the season's a little bug going around.
Yep, yep, yep. As my mother, though, pointed out, better to be homesick than in another continent.
For sure.
On another continent sick.
So speaking of which, what gave you the idea of seeing how they honor Dr. King and other, not just in other American cities, because you are heading to Memphis soon, but seeing how it's done around the globe?
Well, you know, I was at a session at the National Association of Black Journalists convention where someone from the Pulitzer Center was talking about how they like to fund grants for stories that have both domestic and international implications. And I was thinking, I'm not really covering anything that has an international implication. And then I started thinking, we get so hung up on the MLK Street here in the States. Mm-hmm. I wonder what other countries feel about honoring King of anybody. And then I did a quick search and I was like shocked to see that there are places around the world that commemorate King.
So I don't want to spoil your findings, but because you're putting together a whole documentary, but what is named for Dr. King in the two places you visited? And I guess more importantly, for the purposes of this conversation, how are those places treated by their communities?
Well, it's interesting. In Senegal, Dakar in particular, there's a boulevard around, along the coast named after King. But while most people don't realize that it's named after King, even though that's its official name, pretty much anybody you talk to about Dr. Martin Luther King, they can completely tell you who he is, mm-hmm. which is the opposite of Amsterdam, which is where they have a park and a lecture series and a street, but you ask people about King and they don't know as much, which made me start thinking even more than I was already thinking, what is it that King's name is supposed to represent again?
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you are a lifelong Kansas Cityan, a journalist, a woman of color. I am curious what you make of the fact that we just had this huge citywide political showdown over a street name when there's a park named for Dr. King being neglected right alongside the very street we were all fighting about. What does that say about us as a city, both historically and today?
See, that's the problem with this whole debate. I don't think it says much about us as a city at all. I mean, I just think that the whole... that somehow as a country we've gotten into this competition about naming a street after King. It's like using the current terminology of woke, mm-hmm. like, oh, our city's woke because we got a King Street, and this city is more woke because its street was earlier than that city. And it's like, what does that really mean? I mean, because I think that naming something after someone... that's a street is a really static way of commemorating them versus an active way of commemorating them. Like, for example,
like teaching about them in schools.
Exactly. Like, I think the annual events that people have about King yes. do far more to put King's teachings on the consciousness of people than driving down the street does. And that's not putting down having a street named after him at all. I'm just saying that, like, for example, when I was in Amsterdam, I was tickled because I saw a restaurant called Troost, right? And I took a picture of it and I put it on Facebook and made the joke. I'm like, because, you know, KCUR is located on Troost. And I'm like, no matter how far away I am, I'm always at home. And then it made me realize that as old as I am, I have no idea who Troost is named after. I had to literally look that up. And so that's an example of how... just because a street is named after someone doesn't mean that you know a darn thing about them.
You know, Donald, you have been sort of interjecting with agreement as you've heard Michelle talking. Yeah. And this idea about what it means and doesn't to name a street something. Mm-hmm. Can you jump in here and just talk about that?
Yeah, I'm with her 100% on that. You have to go a little bit deeper. And like the annual events are like a prime example of how you can really get people to learn and to understand and recognize, you know, the impact that Dr. King has had on all generations since. A street name that's perfectly fine. That's great. And that can be talked about. We can debate about, you know, where and how that should go. But we should always be mindful about, you know, his name, not, you know, just throwing it around, you know, just to be throwing it around for the wokeness, as she was talking about, and just to, you know, for actually trying to honor him and not just, you know, oh, yeah, Dr. King, we have this. Okay.
So for both of you, what do you think a well-maintained park, on the other hand, with more amenities could mean for a community? Because I do think there's an argument to be made that caring for a park in a neighborhood could make a bigger difference in people's lives than the name of a street.
Well, two things. One, I want to make a prediction real quick that when we get calls, almost every call is going to be where the street name should go. Because we've gotten into the habit of thinking about where the street name is as some sort of, again, litmus test for something, and I don't even quite know what. But I do think that a park is a little bit different because you're more consciously going to a park and thinking about the person.
You stay there a little while.
You stay there, and it makes you think a little bit, as opposed to just driving down the street. Now, having said that, I have never looked up Jacob Luce. And I've been to Luce Park I don't know how many times. So
I'm in the same boat.
Right.
Yeah. Well, just thinking, though, about the significance that this park could have in the community, or maybe already does have. I mean, I see some indications that there may be a homeless camp there, and yes, those are people who are using the park in their own way. And it is hard to imagine Martin Luther King Jr. wanting to shoo anyone away.
Yeah, exactly. And we've done some cleanup over near the homeless camp. Lauren Bell, she was, you know, kind of spearheading that, just, you know, trying to keep that place, you know, sanitary and as clean as possible, you know, for them, because they're going to be coming to, you know, to and fro. So we've been over down there by the, on the edge of the creek underneath the bridge, just kind of sprucing that up too as well.
Let's take a call real quick, and then we'll get right back to this conversation. I want to hear from Larry in Kansas City, Missouri, who has a vision for what could be in this park. Larry, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My thought is that Kansas City is a city of fountains, and I think it would be nice in this park to build a beautiful fountain and surround it by a rose garden, similar to what we have in Luce Park. Luce Park Rose Garden is one of the most peaceful places in town. If you can make something comparable in this Martin Luther King Park, call it the Martin Luther King Memorial Fountain and Rose Garden. Add a playground for the kids and add some picnic tables and a shelter, and you'd have a beautiful place. I think it'd be a lot more than naming a street. So I just want to put in my 2 cents worth. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. What do you guys think of this idea?
It's definitely a start. It's definitely something that, you know, it could be done.
You know, Donald, there have actually been previous efforts to do more with this park.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm curious about those efforts. Can you tell us about them and why they didn't get very far?
I think when they were trying to push for it, they just didn't have the backing at the time. I spoke with Mr. James Watts. I also saw an article with him from about 3 years ago.
He was someone behind an earlier effort.
Yes. So I got in touch with him like almost immediately after we got started because I wanted to try to consolidate the efforts to, you know, improve the park. And yeah, so he was pushing like for to get bathrooms up there. I think they got the tennis courts restored though, so that was pretty cool. But I don't know why they can't quite grab all the cash needed for it. I think it was up on the Parks Board's list, but it just, you know, wasn't high enough as a priority.
I know that you're really in the cleanup stage right now, but what are some of the ideas and visions being floated for the future of the park and for what it could be?
Park expansion was one. Having a memorial statue or just like some information of Dr. King there. So, you know, when people are there, they can kind of see and learn about Dr. King. That would be really great. And just basic amenities like Larry was talking about, like some benches. We really try to start small before anything, you know, talking about any type of anything huge, for sure.
What do you think about, like, right now, I do feel like also because it's between such busy thoroughfares that actually getting to the park, like where you turn, where you would park, do you have to cross these busy streets on foot? Has that come up at all?
Actually, I don't think anyone's talked about that as of yet. There's a little bit of parking, like you take Woodland and you go in, and that's about as far as it goes.
Yeah.
So to get that expanded would be amazing.
Well,
to get some more parking in there.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about Martin Luther King Jr. Park. Such a thing does exist in Kansas City, and now there's momentum behind the effort to honor the park's namesake and how we treat the park, what we use it for. Call 816-235-2888 to join the conversation. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about a park named for Martin Luther King Jr. that is wedged between traffic on 71 Highway, Paseo, Cleaver Boulevard, and Swope Parkway. Four very busy thoroughfares. Mm-hmm. It's been named for the civil rights icon since 1978. But there is not much in it to make it a real draw, and some people are trying to change that. We're discussing it now with KCUR's Michelle Tyrene Johnson, as well as a park cleanup volunteer, Donald Rankins. Hi again, you two.
Hello.
So I want to invite our callers to join this conversation, but I also want to say really explicitly that what I'm hoping to hear is how people have or have not encountered this park already, experiences that they have with the park, and desires that they have for that community, especially people who have an existing investment in the community immediately surrounding the park, which is, again, but it's sort of in that little square between 71 Highway, Paseo, Cleaver Boulevard, and Swope Parkway. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. 816-235-2888. I'm going to go ahead and turn to a caller. Let's hear from Ryan in Grandview. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. I was listening to the debate on the street before, and when I was listening to it, I was thinking, you know, because Dr. King was all about educating people on the importance of equality, and we're also wanting to educate people on his movement and the importance of the civil rights movement. So I thought, wouldn't it be better to honor him by naming an educational institution after him, like a library or a school, rather than a street or a park?
Ryan, that's interesting. Thank you. Michelle, this kind of gets back to what you were saying a moment ago about a place where you go and have some sort of active relationship with it, a park being one example, and then a library kind of fitting within that mold.
I mean, I think a library is another good example of a place where people are usually going to that place with intention. Mm-hmm. And because there's an intention behind why they're going, you just sort of naturally are more likely, not always, but more likely to know why the library is named after someone. I mean, on a personal level, like my life as Michelle, apart from being a reporter, you know, my problem with the way people sometimes think about King is how he's just like the Santa Claus of civil rights. So let's not talk about the tough things he said, the controversial things he said. Let's not talk about the fact that he was arrested like almost 30 times because when he stood up for equality, that was illegal. That was during Jim Crow. If we're not having those conversations about him, it to me, it doesn't matter. Again, personal opinion, what street, library, park, airport, whatever is named after him.
How do you see opportunities for us as a city to like take next steps in having those kinds of conversations or doing that kind of work to honor him?
I mean, one could argue that the controversy itself gives an opportunity to allow that to happen. I mean, since we now have to pick another place, mm-hmm. I would hope that people, as part of this conversation of where and when, have the why and the what.
Absolutely.
Yeah, jump in here, Donald.
Absolutely. That's spot on. Because ever since it became a topic of conversation, now people are thinking, got me thinking, you know, and it got me active and involved. So I really hope that as we talk about it some more, that more people will come up with more creative ways and can just, you know, pitch those out there. I know Mayor Lucas was talking about having a it's like a 90-day window, or we're a few days into that 90-day window, but, you know, to submit, you know, so the city can get on board. So it was really awesome hearing that, you know, he was trying to get behind that as well, just kind of opening up his ears to it.
Can you talk to me about the conversations you've had with other people who have shown up for these park cleanups? Because I wonder if just being together for this shared purpose has inspired some of the kinds of conversations Michelle was just talking about.
I've talked with so many people and heard so many different ideas, you know, on it. And it's just great to get their perspectives. Like, I've heard everything from, like, we need to get, like a water drainage, you know, filter to keep, like, the creek from getting all the trash in there. So I was like, wow. I was like, I never thought of that. So you just hear so many different things from people that you've just never thought of before.
Have you talked about Martin Luther King Jr.?
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things to talk about whenever I talk with people, just because I'm just so inspired by his dream and seeing that people from so many different backgrounds get together and care about this. Like, you know, I get overwhelmed sometimes. I'm like, this is really awesome.
So that does sort of speak to what you were just saying, that the controversy itself has inspired the conversations that you would want to hear.
Exactly. I mean, even in other parts of the world, like, I think IndyCar in Amsterdam, because King is American, that's a whole nother country, except for the people who, you know, didn't know who King was. It made them be more conscious of what he stood for. Sort of like Gandhi is for us, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as Americans, we may not be able to get into great detail about what exactly a Gandhi or a Nelson Mandela did, but we know what they represent. And so there's a consciousness of them and their name in a way that I just sometimes worry that King's name, especially with all the negatives associated with a King Street, because we've all heard the jokes of a King Street, that it is just so diluted what we're trying to honor.
Let's talk to Steve. Steve is calling us from KCK. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. I think we should think a lot bigger. And, you know, there's war museums for every war. I would like to see a Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. International Center for Peace and Civil Rights and make it really, really a big international center.
Why would that be in Kansas City, though, I guess is my question.
Well, we want to honor Dr. King, and so, you know, go big.
It's interesting because, thank you, Steve, for that call. The idea of going big sort of seems at the opposite pole from the idea of thinking about this small park that inspired this conversation and what it could do for a community to honor the park that someone probably fought to have. I mean, do you know the history of how it became named after him in 1978?
I don't know the exact process. I know Emmanuel Cleaver had a strong part in it back in 78. Beyond that, I don't know the process of how it happened. It may have been very similar. Maybe the council voted on it or something like that.
It bothers me that I was born, you know, I can see where the intersection where the hospital used to be, where I was born from this station. I could also, if I stood on the other side of the building, basically, like, it wouldn't take me long to get to where I would be able to see the sign that says Martin Luther King Jr. Park. I was one when it was named that. I didn't know it until a couple weeks ago, and I didn't see it until this morning, and it bothers me.
Well, but here's the thing, like, back to the last caller. He says, wouldn't it be great if we had an international Martin Luther King Center? Well, there is one already in Atlanta, where King's from. So, I mean, you know, that's sort of like the issue I have with, you know, people wanted the airport to be named after King. Well, I mean, King's not from Kansas City. So, I mean, I think that's great that we should think big, but we also have to think about what already exists.
Yes.
And the idea that there is this a division great enough within our own city that crossing the city and ending up at that park, for me, I have been in places that are global. I haven't been to that park. That bothers me. Well, but I have some responsibility for that, but that bothers me.
But think about this. I mean, think about a city where people have their issues about SWO Park.
Yeah.
And SWO Park has the zoo. SWO Park has Starlight Theater.
Oh, yeah.
And what is it that we've heard about SWO Park? I mean, I know I've heard it. Mm-hmm. You know, how there are people who are like, well, I don't like to go to SWO Park because, you know.
Yep.
You know, with the, you know, hanging in the air, right? So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, so if there's a reason why the existing King Park isn't more well known, I mean, we can all do the math.
Yep, connect those dots.
Right.
You know, I mentioned on Twitter this morning that I had visited the park and that it had bothered me. And one of the responses I got is that the park actually does get a lot of use. And I'm curious about that. What do you, as in your work so far, visiting the park, spending time there, cleaning it up, what sorts of use have you witnessed it getting?
Aside from, you know, some people walking, I've only seen a couple people playing tennis. It's not like super active tennis court. But I think, yeah, maybe just people walking up and down and through it. I can't really tell you. I don't see, like, there's not much to do. You know, there's not like ball courts or anything like that there. So it's not a ton of activity you can do there beyond walking or walking your dog.
Let's go ahead and talk with some more callers. I want to hear from Nola in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Nola.
Hi. I just am calling because I'm so fascinated by the connection between what we're trying to do, which is to make Martin Luther King Park a viable, nice place to go in the neighborhood. And I live in the Brookside area, and it's a homes association area called Greenway Fields. And we have this park that has swing sets, and not nearly as big as the Martin Luther King Jr. Park, but we have swing sets and it's nicely maintained. But we always, as the Homes Association board, which I was on, we struggled that it was known as Strawn Park. Hmm. And Strawn was a neighbor who was very racist. And we didn't want it to be known as that. And it was also built by J.C. Nichols. And we didn't want to, you know, have that be what it's known as. So we looked back historically and found that it was known as a Piazzetta, which is a mall park. So we just recently got new signs up to name it. I just think it's so interesting how all the efforts we went through just to get the park not look racist. And, you know, if the same sort of energy could be put into Martin Luther King Jr.'s park with the neighbors and the neighborhood, I think it would be fantastic to have a park that is known as Martin Luther King Jr.'s park and is someplace that people want to go to.
Thanks, Nola. The mention, this is just a small detail from her call, but the role of a homes association in maintaining a public park is a very interesting relationship. And it, not all communities have the same.
Nope.
Yeah, they don't.
No. No, we don't. And it's unfortunate. And that's why we often turn to, you know, the parks board. You know, they're a little bit larger. So, you know, pretty much it's like petitioning, you know, petitioning them for like, hey, help us out, you know, hook us up.
What have those conversations been like?
We have yet to have any real conversations yet. We're still, you know, trying to gather the backing so that way we can submit for the next go round. Because, you know, they handle things in cycles. So.
But I understand you have been in touch so that all of your efforts are sort of on the up and up and
yes.
They know about them.
Yeah. So that, yes, that far as, you know, getting trash bags and they know that we're at the park and we're volunteering. So, yeah, we got that far.
It's also interesting because it's not what's immediately surrounding this park is most immediately traffic and then some residential spaces, but largely also commercial spaces. So whose purview that would be under is a little bit tricky as well.
It is.
Let's talk to Janet in KC North. Hi, Janet. Janet,
Hello?
Are you there? Hello. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes. My connection's not good. I hope you can hear me. I did not even know we had an MLK park before this whole issue came up. And I do like the idea of making it a really nice place. Fountain, memorial. I do think if they did that, they should include some of, well, you know, history that Martin Luther King had to go through, some of his controversial statements, such as his stance on the Vietnam War at the time and that kind of thing. It should be like a well-rounded memorial. And I also like the idea of a library. Why not more than one thing, you know, to invest with his name and, you know, very nice amenities, I think. If they wanted to do that with the park, it should be, you know, worked up to be a pleasant place. The idea of a rose garden or that kind of a thing was really struck home with me.
Okay, thank you, Janet.
Play equipment, picnic, and all that kind of stuff. But maybe a library also.
Yeah.
You know, why not?
Thank you. Thank you so much for that call. You know, before we go, Michelle, part of what we talked about last time we discussed the challenges of finding a street to become our MLK Boulevard here in Kansas City was the fact that, as you've already mentioned, most MLK Boulevards in the U.S. are not doing great. And it seems like this park could be seen through that lens of that same kind of history.
I mean, I agree, but because, again, to use the word I used earlier, we're in some sort of a competition nationally, people will still think that a park isn't the same as a street, right? And, you know, what was really interesting traveling internationally, but bumping into Americans, which kind of gets back to the last time I was on the air talking about this, is the perception of, you know, Kansas, first of all, because nobody can ever keep straight Kansas versus Missouri. Like that city in Kansas that, you know, rejected a Martin Luther King street. And so in everyone's mind, if it's not a street, it doesn't matter. I mean, I hate to say that, but that's really what it boils down to. Like we
is what how it makes us look on some level.
I mean, they could rename Central Park in New York City Martin Luther King Jr. Park, and the first question out of a lot of people's mouths would be, but is there a street in New York City named after King?
Unbelievable.
Right.
I don't get it. I don't understand the fixation on having a street. I don't. This is like some type of citywide, you know, nationwide solidarity thing. I've heard a bunch of different opinions on like why a street, and I still can't seem to wrap my head around.
When I was in Amsterdam,
100% necessary.
When I was in an Amsterdam suburb, I bumped into a black Dutchman, and I was asking him for directions to get to the Martin Luther King Street, and his first thing out of his mouth, I hate that I didn't have my audio on, was, "Oh, it's just a few blocks away, but ours isn't a big deal like it is in the States." And I didn't even know what he meant.
Made sure
by
to
that.
Let you know that.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's interesting to me, Donald, that you aren't interested so much in the tension over the street name, but you are really interested in seeing this park do well. Can you talk to me about what's different about that to you?
Like Michelle was saying, it's something that, you know, we already have. It's something that's been established long since. And, you know, I kind of believe in, you know, you take care of, you know, what you have before you. You know, you ask for new stuff. That's kind of how I was brought up. So if we have a park and it's not in, you know, the best of condition or a condition in which that would truly commemorate Dr. King, it's hard to say that, okay, well, if we get a street that is going to be the same thing.
What do you see challenges standing in your way?
Yeah, I do. I see a lot of challenges, and just challenges in terms of not necessarily agreement. I think everyone I've spoke to generally is on board with it. They like it. Just in general, just getting the whole backing and really getting enough awareness drawn, you know, from the surrounding neighborhoods and the city themselves, you know, to come together to really agree and push it forward even faster.
Well, Donald Rankins, thank you so much and good luck.
Hey, you're very welcome. Thank you.
And Michelle Tyrene Johnson, thank you. I'm really looking forward to your documentary.
Thank you.
Up next, something we all experience without knowing much about it. We'll be hearing about a new study from MU that could be pretty useful in everyday life. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for that on KCUR's Central Standard in just a minute. Just when you think a study's already been done on everything imaginable, someone comes along and surprises you with new research on a topic that's never been examined in a scholarly way. Well, the latest from Mizzou is new research on something most of us can detect from a mile away, even if we can't describe it. Arrogance. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking with the professor behind this work, Nelson Cowan, a psychology professor at MU. Hi, Nelson.
Hello.
So what you have created here is actually, and I'm quoting from the press release now, it's, quote, one of the first comprehensive literature reviews on arrogance. What does that mean?
The term arrogance hasn't been, you know, scientifically defined, but it's basically thinking that you know more than you do, that your capabilities are greater than they are, and using that information sometimes in a comparative way, that you feel superior to others. And I think that the quality of arrogance, although it's something that everybody has to some extent. Too much of it impedes interactions between humans at every level, from the personal to group interactions and even political interactions.
What is a literature review?
A literature review is where we read the research that we can find. In our case, there was a lot of value in linking together research on the topic of arrogance from different disciplines. So some of it came from cognition, that is what you think, and to some extent what you feel, what your motivations are. Some of it came from social psychology, how people interact, and some of it came from clinical psychology, when a person might be considered abnormal.
You found something that you call a continuum of arrogance with three types of arrogance and six levels of arrogance. Can you walk me through that?
Sure. To go back a bit, as a cognitive psychologist teaching throughout my career, I've been very aware that I'm teaching about illusions that people have, their perceptual illusions. There are limitations in how much we can hold in mind at once. That's what my own research has been on. There are limitations in memory. There are false memories. There are errors in people's reasoning and judgment, decision-making. And in social interaction, these all come out. For a long time, I've wanted to explore this theme in a broader way than I do in my own research and figure out how it is that people cope with their information shortage and how they're unaware of this information shortage and how it affects every aspect of life. So if one has a conversation, you can have an argument about what you said. No, you didn't say that. Yes, I did. There's the possibility of one person,
that conversation.
Many times, one person forgetting what they said, but the other person alternatively may have falsely interpreted what was said in the first place. And since we don't remember in complete verbatim recall what was said, we remember the gist. If you get the gist wrong in the first place, you're going to make a mistake in indicating what was said. It may have been what you received, but not what was meant. For all sorts of reasons like that, I wanted to explore broadly and connect these different areas, but it was too much breadth for me to tackle myself. And I came up with the idea of teaching a graduate level course in which we would explore this concept of arrogance together. And when we did, we ended up from the literature review, linking together many different areas, we ended up with this continuum. So I can next tell you about the continuum.
Yeah, please.
So basically, everyone has some amount of arrogance. Everyone has distorted information and limitations in their abilities. And most of those people are not entirely aware of their limitations, so they overestimate how much information they have. And of all those people, you find that some, for various reasons, resist learning what their limits are. There may be motivational reasons. It's hard work to realize that your ideas are wrong and to restore your world by changing those ideas. So those three levels together we call individual arrogance because they have to do with your own relationship to facts. The next level up we call comparative arrogance. It has two components. So you may fail to consider the perspectives of other people, just as we were talking about in the conversation. You may only include the perspective that of what you heard, but what was actually meant is what you need to know, and that's the other person's perspective. Of those people who typically fail to consider the perspectives of others, some of those will start to form a belief of their own superiority. And so those two together are what we call comparative arrogance because we find that that's the kind of arrogance related to interpersonal relationships. And then the last level we call antagonistic arrogance because based on the belief of superiority, some people denigrate others. And they do it perhaps because they're motivated to feel superior. Maybe secretly they feel inferior and they're counteracting that. We don't know all the answers why these levels occur, but we're hoping to stimulate more research in this area because there hasn't really been enough research.
So can you list the three levels again? The three types.
The three types: individual, comparative, and antagonistic.
And then there are six levels.
Right. And so I don't have single words for each level, but do you want me to go through them
again? Yeah, kind of explain how you sort of like, I don't know whether you would say climb the ladder of arrogance or...
Well, for one thing, we don't want to divide people. We want everyone primarily to look at themselves. And I think that will help a lot. But the way you climb the ladder is not completely known, but at least in a particular situation, because some of these may be situation specific. That is, a person may be arrogant in a certain area, and it isn't at all clear that a person will be arrogant to the same degree across different situations. Maybe some people are arrogant at work more. Maybe some people are arrogant at home more. But so we don't really know how you climb. What we know is that logically, each level has something to do with the one before it. So we all have this distorted information. You can't overestimate how much information you have unless you are missing some information. You can't resist the new information unless you there's something you need to be told. And, you know, similarly, the failure to consider the perspective of others couldn't occur if you didn't overestimate your own value or your own abilities compared to others.
You know, can I just
and so on
jump in and say something about what has been my perception of arrogance, which differs a little bit, though not dramatically, from what you're saying. And of course, I haven't studied it, but I just am curious about this, is that your definition of arrogance is that somebody thinks they know more than they do and kind of wields that in a jerky kind of way.
Yes, that's a very inappropriate verb.
But the thing I'm curious about is I feel like there are people who maybe are correct in their estimation of how much they know, but that doesn't stop me from finding their conduct arrogant. Like, do you have to be wrong about how much you know to be behaving arrogantly?
I would say that in a sense, you do have to be wrong. So the person who, let's say, knows a lot about, let's say, mathematics and is bragging about it is deficient in social knowledge. So they're deficient in the perspective of the person they're talking to. So they are not aware that they're making the person feel bad by bragging about it when the other person's bad at math, let's say.
But what if they don't even feel bad? What if they're just rolling their eyes? Like, oh my God, get over yourself. You're good at math.
Then the social knowledge that they are missing is the knowledge about how they should act in order to get the kind of response they want to get or to be perceived the way they want to be perceived. If they are doing this and feeling that they want to have a friendship, for example, then this might not be the best way to proceed. So they're lacking some kind of knowledge there.
That makes sense. Well, so that gets me to this piece of, you know, this is ultimately about improving interpersonal relationships. Can you explain that? How does arrogance actually plague relationships or prevent people from connecting in positive ways?
Well, let's go to the area that perhaps has been studied the most, even though there hasn't been very much research on arrogance. There's been some. And the most comprehensive look has probably been workplace arrogance. And in the workplace, people who display arrogance that I think lines up best with the higher levels of it that I mentioned.
Antagonistic arrogance.
And the antagonistic kind are not good managers, so they may have been put in a leadership position because they display boldness or assertiveness or decisiveness. But if it's based on arrogance, that is, if it's based on conveying that you can do more than you can and you might have fooled someone, then when you get into the job, you won't be able to accomplish what you did. You'll disappoint people. You'll be off-putting for your workers who you're supervising, and they won't do their best work either. So in the workplace, one can see that arrogance is actually not a very good thing, even though it may help someone become a leader. It doesn't help them lead.
Interesting.
If it's too much.
So I'm curious why arrogance matters, or maybe more to the point, why understanding it matters, because I feel like I kind of don't even want to give arrogance the satisfaction of talking about it like it's important, because that's exactly what arrogance wants.
Well, I think if people took this research to mean that you should accuse each other, it would be harmful. But if people take it in a more positive way, that you should, number one, look at your own behavior, and number two, look at ways that in which you might interact with other people better, then it can be helpful. And there are actually some suggestions we make. Most of the suggestions are that we need more research, but one suggestion we picked up from the literature is how to argue with someone you perceive as arrogant. So, for example, if you just try to lambast the person with your beliefs, it's not going to work. But if you instead hear something that you think is an arrogant statement and encourage the person to explain where they got that belief or that point of view, it's often found that the person will realize that they don't have a good basis for it. They haven't articulated it. And if they're given a chance, at the very worst, you're listening to them, and that hasn't happened before. And more positively, they may realize what the holes in their argument are.
Well, okay. So how do you expect people to use this information in real life? The three types of arrogance and the six levels, you have this sort of like chart. Is that something that you imagine being sort of useful in particular contexts, particular settings in real life?
For the most part, I think it may help people who are experimental psychologists figure out how to begin doing research in this area. That is, defining the topic rigorously is a step toward being able to do research. One reason you might not find enough research on arrogance is that it can be defined in so many ways, and nobody really thought about that.
Has anyone... And I don't mean this to imply that they should. Has anyone ever called you arrogant? And if so, I have this vision that like the best thing to say would be like, do you even know what arrogance is?
I don't know if anyone has in those terms, but probably I've been called, and most people have been called related things, or it's been implied.
Related things like snob or...
Or bragging or something. When someone hears that, I think the best thing to do is not to give a very particular answer, but to absorb some of how they're feeling. And so it doesn't much matter completely if you are or not. You need to address that there's a break in the communication going on, or dissatisfaction, and that can be addressed.
Nelson Cowan, with us from the Department of Psychological Sciences at MU. Thanks so much for sharing this research today.
You're welcome.
That's it for today. Arrogance with the professor at MU, who we just talked to, and MLK Park in Kansas City earlier in the show. It'll all be ready for you in case you missed something at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. That's kcur.org/centralstandard, and you can talk to us about any of it on Twitter. We are at KCURCST, and I'm at Gina KCUR. Tomorrow, why is a Kansas City neighborhood getting behind an apartment building specifically for artists? That discussion tomorrow at 10 on KCUR's Central Standard. This show is produced here at KCUR by Melody Rowell, Mackenzie Martin, and Noah Taborda. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date is next, so don't miss it.